Welcome back to The Takeaway. It's Todd Zwillick with you today. For the last few months on this show, we've been running our series called Uncomfortable Truths, where we invited you, our listeners, to talk with someone in your life about race. Last week, we featured a conversation with Takeaway listener Rochelle Shimke and her brother, Garrett. Rochelle is white, and Garrett, who was adopted, is black.
I grew up happy because I wasn't looking for those kind of things. I wasn't thinking of myself as a victim. I wasn't looking to be mistreated, so therefore I wasn't, even if I was. So why can't that be more of the trend, as opposed to always going up and pointing fingers at people and just calling everybody in the world a racist for everything?
That conversation made us want to turn to Rebecca Carroll. She's editor of special projects at WNYC Radio, and she spends a lot of time talking to families and advising them on adoption and interracial adoption. Rebecca, like Garrett, is black and was also adopted by a white family, but had a very different experience than Garrett did. Rebecca joins me now. Rebecca Carroll, welcome.
Hi, Todd.
You heard Garrett there describing the nut of his experience. Your experience was very different.
Well, I mean, it's different in that I sort of doggedly pursued what it meant to have a kind of racial identity in an all-white environment. And I do want to also say that this notion that one has to go looking for racism in order for it to exist is both dangerous and false. I mean, it's false because the whole structural backdrop of this country is founded on racism. It's dangerous because it sort of lets lesser identifiable forms of racism other than violence go under the radar. And that's really my chief concern with interracial adoption, especially white parents of black children in super white environments, is that it's almost impossible to avoid internalizing that sort of white lens unless you have parents and people around you who can help you sort of get out of that thinking.
Now, this isn't abstract for you. You're a black woman. You grew up in New Hampshire. Talk about that and how that brought you to this place.
Well, I was adopted as an infant. My parents had two biological kids before they adopted me. They're 4 and 6 years older. And I was aware that I was black. I was not aware of my race. So that is to say, I had brown skin. You know, I watched Electric Company. I saw Morgan Freeman play Easy Reader, who I sort of fantasized was my birth father, because I knew my parents were very open with me that I was adopted and that I had birth parents. But I didn't have any sort of tools of navigating what race meant and what racial identity meant. So when I first started to come into contact with incidents of racism, it didn't occur to me to talk with my parents about it because there were no black people in our lives. There was no social reference or cultural reference. So, you know, when I was in fifth grade, my teacher told me I was very pretty for a black girl, which I knew it made me feel badly, but I didn't know really why it made me feel badly, and I didn't know what that meant. So I sort of had to find out how to process racism, which then led me to really take a deep dive into navigating what race meant.
Now that you're an adult, what do you feel like you missed growing up the way you did?
I really often mourn not having had black people, black family around me. The feeling that I have when I walk into a room full of black folks is like nothing else. I feel lifted. I feel kinship. I feel joy. I feel seen. I wish that I had had this when I was coming up. It's like I remember the girl that I was. You know, there's this whole hashtag black girl magic that's in the world now. And I just think I had black girl magic. Like I was a very kind of precocious kid and I was very social and I loved to dance and perform. Like I was all of that. And if I had had that kind of support system, it would have saved my heart a little bit because right at that age when it was important is when that my teacher said that to me. And then a series of things happened, right? My friend in high school's father forbid him to take me to the prom because I'm black. I had a boss in high school in my after school job call me a lazy N-word because I refused to clean the bathroom after he used it. And I was a secretary. Like, that wasn't really even my job. Like, a series of things happened that really started to crush my soul a little bit. And I think had I had that kind of support to kind of buoy me, that would have been really good.
What did your mother say when you went home and said, "Mom, he won't go to the prom with me. His dad won't let him"?
Each of these incidents that happened and I've talked with my mom about this. Either I told them and their response was so unremarkable that I forget, or I did not tell them because it didn't occur to me to tell them. They were not thinking about me as their black daughter. They just weren't at any point in time. And so for me to kind of say, well, this happened, they probably would have said, that sucks, you know, but without any kind of context, without any kind of cultural context.
So, Rebecca, today your mother reads what you write. Let's assume she's listening to this right now about the shortcomings that you experienced in your interactions with her, and through no deficit of love. But what are your conversations with her like now?
So she was recently here, and she is truly one of my most favorite people, and so generous of spirit and loving. I want to say that. But so she visits me here. She's an artist, and so we often go to exhibits together. Recently, she came and we went to the Brooklyn Museum to see this exhibit about black women artists called We Wanted a Revolution. After the exhibit, she said to me, this is amazing. I had no idea. And I said, I know. I know you had no idea. And that is really painful for me. And she said, okay, let's figure this out, you know. But she is deeply committed to whatever I send her way. Of course, as it is for any mother to hear from your adult child or your child, this was painful for me and you could have helped it not be painful. But she faces it head on.
Have you talked to your brother and sister about this and your upbringing?
It's really hard to engage with them on this subject. And, you know, they're not bad people. They're just not curious about my experience, which has been very, very difficult to navigate. And as I get older, particularly as a mom, you know, I just feel less and less like pushing if they're not going to meet me somewhere. So it's, I think that they would say exactly what a lot of white parents and white siblings of adopted children would say, and that is, we love you like you're our sister, and that's all there is to it.
None of this really matters because you're just our sister. Why talk about it?
That's right. That's right. And, you know, they don't read my work. They don't really know what I do. So it makes it harder to maintain a relationship, quite frankly. Again, not because they're bad people, but because at a certain point, you have to see what's happening in the world around you.
So, Rebecca Carroll, how old is your son now?
He turns 12 in 2 weeks.
Oh, he's getting there. He's almost a teenager.
Yep, he sure is.
You think a lot, I'm sure, about what he'll be like when he's 21 mm-hmm. or 25, mm-hmm. and he'll be a biracial young black man yep. in America.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you want him to be?
Oh, I want him to be himself. I want him to be his best and smartest and happiest self. And I want him to be certainly racially conscious, culturally fulfilled, and again, of the world.
Rebecca Carroll, thank you for being here. A pleasure as always.
Thanks, Todd.
Rebecca Carroll is editor of Special Projects at WNYC Radio.